We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee.
Alex, quick tone check, because I don't think people will realize how much of a hockey guy my man is. Season starts last night. Blackhawks, Penguins, it's like Sidney Crosby against this young fella who apparently is the second coming. What's our deal here?
Hockey does have a new second coming. I'd never watched him play a professional game because, well, nobody had, because it was his, I'm not watching Blackhawks preseason hockey or any preseason hockey for that matter. But yeah, his name's Connor Bedard. He's good. I mean, you could see in the first period the way this guy flies around. He's a serious young man. So
five-star recruit, ready to rock.
More than a five-star recruit.
Ooh.
More than a five-star recruit. He's like, you know, Caleb Williams or Andrew Luck or Trevor Lawrence. He's
ooh, honestly, no. But okay. Thing,
hockey gets one of these guys historically about every 15, 20 years. And I think he's the latest of these guys. The thing is, it hasn't been 15 or 20 because hockey got Connor McDavid, who plays in Edmonton, and thus a lot of Americans don't know who he is.
Hockey Patreon episode one day?
No. We don't want to subject people to that. The NHL has to pay for that, please. The way that league markets itself, they don't get that for free.
Right.
I'm Alex Kirshner. That's Richard Johnson. Stephen Godfrey is back soon, off on his own today. We are excited because the college football season continues apace. It's midseason. Is that sobering for you that six games or so have been played by most teams?
Honestly, yeah, dude. It is flying this season. It really is.
I feel like it always does, man. It always does. We look forward to getting these games for, what, 39 weeks a year or 35, 36 weeks a year of not having college football. And then it comes and it goes really, really fast. But I'm excited as well because we get to press the panic button this week. We fielded a lot of questions from our beloved Patreon subscribers at patreon.com/SCD, asking what was on their minds at the halfway point of the season. And we got a lot of questions from fans who are either despairing or gleeful, depending on who they root for, about what is wrong with this team or that team, and whether it is time to completely panic about the state of the program or whether things might get better soon. So we're going to start with a couple of programs here that people have asked about. And Richard, I want to kind of put these past you and you tell me and the listeners exactly how panic worthy things are at these programs. Sound good?
All right.
Number one, we got two questions, one from Sam H, one from Rob L. First, how long do I have to suffer Kendall Briles? And that might hint the school that it's about. From Rob L, what is happening at TCU?
So I think it's kind of interesting where TCU's at right now. Like we said before the season, who was your favorite TCU player off last year's team? Well, trick question. He's probably not on this year's team. So that was one thing coming into the season. But there was a lot. There was a lot of optimism around the program that this team was more talented than last year's team. And I think that it's, while that may be true, I think it's true, and I think it can be true at every position group besides quarterback, which is one of their big problems. The other problem is, you know how we had a lot of fun with the one score games that they won last year, and we didn't call it luck, but they won a lot of one score games last year. Mm-hmm. They've lost 2-1 score games this year, right? Mm-hmm. On offense.
TCU Reds and West offense. Virginia both beat them by a field, or sorry, Colorado and West Virginia both beat them by a field goal.
Right. And we know what the Colorado thing was. And then obviously they had a kick blocked against West Virginia. That would have sent the game in overtime. So ball is not bouncing their way. Again, and as we talked on that podcast all season, as TCU was making that run, I'm not calling what that was luck. I'm not just like throwing that out as luck, but you have to understand this is the same thing with like the Vikings. Like the Vikings go 13-3 with a million one score games. Guess what? They've lost all the one score games this season. Like, it happens. And I think you're seeing that. The other thing, and just specifically about that offense, they are awful in the red zone. Like, awful. The Colorado game, I think, was like the embodiment of that. But can't they finish drives.
So
can't
bad.
Finish drives, can't win games.
To put a number on that, how bad they are in the red zone, in goal-to-go touchdown percentage, they are 113th in the country, 62.5%. They have scored a touchdown on half of their red zone drives, which is 109th.
Horrible.
The lack of finishing, and I don't know if it's line degradation or if Kendre Miller was just a special player. The thing is that it's not like Imani Bailey can't run the football. Like, I don't think his performance has been, that guy's like 700 yards in midseason. I don't think he's the reason that they have been in decline, but it's not working. And I sort of wonder, Richard, about the play calling discrepancy between these programs, these teams of last year and this year. I don't know. And I actually wonder in a non-loaded way how much they're missing Garrett Riley and how much Kendall Bryles has underperformed. And I honestly don't know. Obviously, I'd like it to be a lot because I don't like the guy, just to kind of put my cards on the table about Kendall Bryles. But I don't know if it's a Kendall Bryles thing or if it's a Johnston thing. And it's a Max Duggan thing.
Right, right. You know, and kind of remember about Garrett Riley, Clemson ain't scoring 50 points a game. Clemson may be better on offense, but they ain't scoring 50 points a game. So it doesn't necessarily have to be that Garrett Riley took all the trade secrets or whatever.
Thereof, yeah.
I would probably hint to it's a Quentin Johnston thing more than, you know, in the if we're doing a binary.
Probably. He was a special college football player who would have fit in well on any of Saban's early Alabama teams or Dabo's really good Clemson teams. Like, he's just one of those wide receivers who completely changed everything. And then when one team made it so he didn't, that was what TCU looked like against Georgia. And now you have a season of lacking anybody even remotely like that. And I think that shows up in a significant lack of any explosive passing game with Chandler Morris.
Right.
Like, there's nothing here big pass play wise. And that's the obvious thing that's missing.
And I think that, you know, it's like, remember some of like Quentin Johnson's there were other receivers on that team that played really well, but Quentin Johnston showed out. Like, some of what you saw from Quentin Johnston was like, he could turn nothing into something in like, I'll take a Fiesta Bowl, I'll take a screen pass, 80 yards, Kansas game last year. I will drive us the length of the field more or less on one drive, like he did. So you see some of that kind of stuff. I think for TCU, like, TCU's superpower last year was not an overwhelming talent advantage. TCU's superpower last year was a group of guys that had an insane amount of cohesion, particularly in our portal era, and had gelled together, had played together, had lost together. And then Sonny's staff comes in and just gives them a breath of fresh air vibes wise. And like, I know that's not a very satisfying answer because I know that that's not, it's not specific. Like, I don't have a vibes column in SP Plus. I wish I did. Bill, work on that for me. But I was around that program enough to know that, like, yeah, man, vibes were a lot of the reason why, in my opinion, they were able to pull out some of those tight games in tight spots. They loved each other. They trusted each other. They played with each other. A lot of that team had played with each other for long enough, and they got a breath of fresh air, and they rode it to some heights that were pretty unprecedented.
I am curious about the defense, which is basically the same as it was last year in terms of, you know, overall caliber of play, results, SP Plus ranking, etc. They didn't lose Joe Gillespie, the coordinator. They did lose a ton of good players on that defense. Like, most of your notable guys that you remember from that TCU playoff run aren't there anymore. Like, Josh Newton still is, a few others still are, but for the most part, it's new faces, and they have maintained their caliber of play. So I don't blame the defense, but it's possible that given what they lost on offense, that they just needed something that was unreasonable from their defense. Like, they needed something that they never could have delivered. And that's kind of where I'm leaning in all of their, in their two losses the last couple of weeks. Like Colorado just outscored them and the defense was beaten by Shadur and Travis Hunter and the fellas, but like they just have not been able to score against West Virginia and Iowa State teams that scored a combined less than 50 points in these last 2 weeks. And so maybe it was impossible for TCU's defense, given the personnel losses that they had, to cover up for a pretty significant decline in the offense. But what I do feel pretty good about is 7-win team, maybe 6. Like this is unfortunately, I think the step back that some people predicted before the year, you're seeing what it looks like when it's just really hard to replace special players. Richard, you know what TCU fans might feel good about, however, at the same time?
I think so.
Misery has company, baby. The Baylor Bears suck. I think that I am absolutely pressing a midseason panic button on this team. Do you concur?
Yeah, I pressed the button on that team after they lost to Texas State and got physically dominated by Texas State. Like, it's not a good football team. They needed that win against UCF. I mean, in the worst way. Baylor's, for the uninitiated, Baylor's 2-4. One of their wins was an insane UCF comeback. The other one was against an FCS team. So that's what we're working with in general here.
Yeah. Baylor's record against FBS teams is 1-4.
And they are on a bye this week, by the way. They're on a bye.
Yeah. Are we sure? So here's what's hard to figure out about Baylor. Like, it's pretty obvious what they aren't doing well. The most obvious thing is they can't stop the run. Like, their defensive front is just getting caved in by pretty much everybody that they play.
And we talked about that in week one, because or after week one, because I made the mention, like, you look on that depth chart, there's nobody up front over, like, there's one player, I think, that's over like 280 pounds. Like, they're lighting the ass up front. They're getting ran over. Again, Texas State physically dominated this team.
Yes. That's the most notable problem. Offensively, overall, it's been pretty bad. I think a lot of that is chalked up to Blake Chapin.
But it's bleak.
Yeah, it's bleak. A lot of that is chalked up to Blake Chapin being hurt for a while at the beginning of the year. He is back now. His numbers are actually fine. I think that what isn't fine is anything about their running game, which raises, like, this is a program that I want to ask a question about. It's specific. Like, are they feeding these guys? Like, is the strength program there on par with
feeding these
guys? I'm serious. Like, when your problem defensively is what it is for Baylor, and when you're a team that can't stop the run and can't run the ball in the Big 12, like, isn't that what you'd look at? Like, don't, like, your guys just aren't big and strong and fast enough. Isn't that part? It's not like Jeff Grimes can't call run plays. Like, that's not in his resume that he can't do that. I'm just a little bit confused about why they are physically overwhelmed on both sides of the line.
Yeah. It's something that's going to have to change there. Quick. And I think what I think you're about to say next is why I think it's pretty clear that it's going to have to change quick, because either it changes quick or it gets changed.
So Baylor's athletic director, Mac Rhodes, has gone to the microphones this week. He was talking with a Baylor site, 365 Sports, Baylor show, 365 Sports, and did the basic, like, reassurance of the fan base stuff that any AD is going to do in these situations. Like, no one's okay with this performance. We're working to get it fixed, et cetera. He's also talking very specifically about changes he thinks the team needs to make, particularly on offense. He says, we got a good staff. We got good football minds. I'm paraphrasing from 365 here. They didn't all of a sudden get less smart from 2021. But right now we're struggling to run the ball, and our offense is built for the run to set up the pass. And that's not working well, particularly when we get into the red zone and we're struggling to stop the run, yada, yada, yada. And he says that he has never in the past told Aranda to make specific changes.
Mm.
But he says, and I'll quote directly here, so there's no room for misinterpretation, probably where our personnel is right now. It needs to fit our personnel better. We've had those very honest and direct and candid conversations. End quote. Sounds like the AD is telling Dave Aranda and Jeff Grimes that it's track meet time on offense. Like it is time to just chuck the thing around and see how that works. And I'm not sure they have the guys to do that either. But when the AD is being this specific about what he thinks should happen to reporters, I don't know. Like, I just don't know. And I do mean that in a loaded way. Like, I don't know. And I suspect bad.
Yeah. They knew they needed to win bad against UCF the other day, and they did. But I don't know, man.
But this Texas Tech game was a big game, too. And that's a rivalry game, and it went completely the other direction. That's definitive. I'm going to press this panic button right now.
You're pressing it on Baylor, it's so bad that I'm
still confused because of how I've generally viewed Aranda as a coach, but like it's a definitive panic button situation there. It just looks like a total breakdown of all of the things that they were good at, so I just don't understand it. Mason L asked us, if Will Hall goes 1-11 or 2-10 this year at Southern Miss, is he fired? On the one hand, he's exactly what you'd think should succeed at USM. He's an energetic ambassador for the program. He recruits the state well, and he had a good offensive track record before coming to Hattiesburg. However, another season with double-digit losses in year three is a tough sell. And if you were the AD, Richard, what would you do to save this football program? It's a very, very fair series of questions, I would say, about Southern Miss, which, if you have been, just to kind of give everyone the background here, they are 1-5. This would not be a second season of double-digit losses, but it would be after 3-9 in his first year. It would be pretty close, and things look pretty bad as you look at the Golden Eagles right now.
That is that's one FCS win in week one, and then a lot of losses.
Yes,
in a row. Not awesome, and haven't been competitive in some of them. And
they've
also
been competitive in really like one game, two games.
Yeah, look, I don't expect you to be competitive against Florida State, but you know, Tulane, yeah, I understand is a good team, but you should be able to, you know, be a little frisky against them, that sort of stuff. So I don't know.
Texas State, same deal.
Yeah, Texas State, and they were a little frisky in the end there. Texas State was the game where they were a little frisky there. They lost by two scores in that game, but like weird game where Texas State goes up 42-6, and then like Southern Miss actually comes all the way back and then isn't able to finish the drill. That was a weird game. So I don't know. I think it's one of the things where, okay, bye week for them. They're also on a bye, reset and see what happens. Like it doesn't get any easier in that league is your problem. They haven't even played the class of the league. That's, I think, the thing that does not spark joy.
No, to be clear on what's ahead for them, the next 2 weeks that they play, they're on a bye this week, but then they're going to go at South Alabama, at App State, which took a tough loss the other night at home to Coastal. They still have Louisiana. That's also a road game. They have at Mississippi State in a body bag game. Well, maybe we'll see how bad Mississippi State is, and Troy to close the year. Like it is kind of tough to see where they're finding more than two more wins and maybe more than one. And so where that will leave you, if you kind of look to what seems to be an inevitability, is a 3-9 first year, step forward to a bowl, and then you're looking at like a 2-10 or another 3-9 in year three. The questioner, Mason, made a good point that you would think Will Hall, like in terms of the fit evaluation that you make when he's hired, seemed like a pretty good fit.
What do I say about fit?
Well,
what do I say about fit?
Tell everyone what we say about fit, Richard.
It fits a crutch. Fits a crutch.
Fit may well be a crutch in the case of Will Hall. Everyone was extremely excited. He's a Mississippi boy. He played at a number of different stops, professionally and college-wise in the region and the state. He had been a very exciting local flavor hire when they brought him in. He came from Tulane, where he'd been under Willie Fritz, with this powerful option-y run game. And it is confusing why the huge step backward. Remember their first year when they were terrible? That was the year that they played like 14 different quarterbacks, including running backs at quarterback. That was a wash. but why are you so much worse than you were last year? What is the identity of the program? That's not clear right now. Teams have run it down their throats. The shotgun option run stuff has not panned out at all, even with a very veteran back at this point, Frank Gore Jr. Frank Gore Jr. is funny because I feel like we've been saying, damn, that makes us feel old that Frank Gore Jr. is in college football forever now.
Since like 2019.
And now I don't even feel old anymore. Now I'm waiting for Frank Gore III to be a college running back. Like it feels like it's been happening for a long time. Their backup running back's actually been more productive this year, which has been interesting, but he's only gotten about half the carries. So am I pressing the panic button on Southern Miss? I'm pressing the dialogue button.
What, they're one in five? I mean, they're one in five.
It's confusing. So dialogue button, but if you want to press the panic button, do it. And in terms of if they're going to fire him, I mean, if they go 1-11 in year three, I don't know, but sort of my educated guess would be if they don't win again this year, that's pretty tough to bring a guy back for another year. So that's the situation at Southern Miss. Richard, let's go north. The Indiana Hoosiers. We touched on them on the hurry up a few weeks ago. This is from Sean R. When do we turn the page on Tom Allen? Or has the page already been turned?
You got $25 million to turn the page?
Do you? Interesting question. I don't. It's,
you might.
Yeah.
But do you?
This
again, is, people are going to say, Big Ten team, money. I'm going to say it again. What I said it with Michigan State. I said it with Northwestern. The understanding that I have of Big Ten revenue distribution does not mean on July 1st, everybody gets richer than they already are. Like, is probably the way to say it.
Yeah.
That's not what's happening. So understand that. Just because they signed that big old deal, some fine print got to get read on that.
So they are currently doing things that certainly look like the things that a program does when it knows a ship is sinking. They fired the offensive coordinator, Walt Bell, who has taken on a lot of kind of odd jobs in his career that have not worked out very well for him. They brought in, and I think Rod Carey was already there as like an analyst.
Yes.
Rod Carey is the OC. Justin Fuente is here now as well.
Yeah, I actually broke this news on Sunday that, yeah, Justin Fuente, former Virginia Tech head coach and Memphis head coach, is, yeah, he's in the building. He is going to be an analyst on this staff. He and Carey apparently go way back, is the connection. And so the funny thing is this is now the third time, I guess, they've done this, because Walt Bell was an analyst and then became offensive coordinator. Rod Carey was an analyst and then became offensive coordinator. Now Justin Fuente's in the building as an analyst. I'm not going to tell you that defense is good. That is not what I'm going to say with a straight face. Improved from last year, I think.
Ooh, I don't know about that. I don't know. It's pretty similar.
I understand that.
Yeah.
So, but is some of the reason why your defense isn't playing to its ability the fact that you just can't score? That's the chicken and egg situation.
They weren't scoring much last year either. or the year before that. I mean, in fact, the last time that they scored was the COVID year. When
they had
a lot different.
Who, a quarterback?
Michael Penix Jr. They also had a couple of really good receivers on that team as well. Freifogel Nation, stand up. Do you agree? Because I think I kind of treat this as a given and just like assume that people will go along with what I'm saying. Do you agree that it seems over, first of all, like in terms of Indiana as a possible bowl team, plucky mid-table Big Ten team? That seems over.
I mean, yes, and it's Indiana. I mean, like it.
That's why I put the bar where I did. I didn't say,
yeah, we'll I know, ever
contend
I know,
for
I know.
Big Ten championships know, again. No one expects that. No one expects that.
Like, God hates Indiana football. We understand that. But like, it's. I'm not doing the thing where I say the schedule is going to get easier, so they're going to be good. That's not what I'm saying. I do want to say their losses are Ohio State, Louisville, and Maryland. Like, they've been smoked by the upper crust of their league and what may
call us upper crust.
Go an Terps. Upper crust. Thank you, Richard. Of an upper crust for now. Wait until July 1st. Upper crust in the ACC. Don't look at who they play on Saturday. you know, they're going to get vaporized on Saturday. Sorry. But, you know, it's going to get worse Michigan. Before it gets yep. even better, I fear.
So at the moment, if you just go by the SP plus values for every team left on Indiana's schedule and you bake in home field adjustments, there is nobody left on this schedule who I think they would be underdogs of less than a touchdown to. They are 2-3. If things go really well, they could perhaps pull a 4-8. But I think more likely is they find one somewhere and go 3-9, which I believe is what they did. No, they were 4-8 last year. So they would go 3-9 after a 4-8. If things go the way that it looks like they're going, it's just a choice about what you value as a school.
Right. If things go the way that they're going, they're going to find $25 million.
Maybe. Somewhere. The thing is, it's just a choice. And like we've talked to Indiana people about this. You know, we know some Indiana people. I know a few of you will text me after the show comes out. It's just a decision. Like, what do you care about? And that sounds like I'm agitating for something that I'm really not. If you just want to be the basketball school and not tap your donors or take too much of your television revenue for football, then that's like, okay, that's a decision that you can make, but the football team will just be an appendage. Like you are sort of punting on any growth, on getting any special pride out of Saturdays in the fall for a while, because it's just done here. It's just not happening with Tom Allen anymore. And so, yeah, like you have to decide, does $20 or $25 million plus hiring a new coach fit into your institutional values? Does it fit into, if you're the athletic director, your fundraising plan? Like, do you feel comfortable? Because they sure do in basketball. Like when Archie Miller was a disaster, they were like, hey fellas, we could use some shekels here. And they got him and they fired him. It's Indiana, it's football. It's just a really acute, really obvious like decision point about what you value if you're that school.
Connor better sell some shirts, brother.
That's true. Hey, if you buy a shirt from Homefield, you could be contributing to the Tom Allen Buyout Fund. I don't know. Richard, Arkansas. Fans are already turning to the future. We have a question from Andrew B. What are reasonable expectations for Arkansas in a new look SEC? I think that is that's turning to the future and sort of looking at what is happening with the current 2-4 Arkansas Razorbacks, who are about to be 2-5 because they play at Alabama, and wondering what's next.
Look, I've kind of had my eye on this for a while for a couple different reasons. Of note, Sam Pittman's buyout slashes by half if he's under 500. Alex, you want to look up his record real quick while I vamp a little bit?
Well, at the moment, as I said, they're 2-4 and they are going to be 2-5. And I think that after they lose this game, finding a path to 6 wins when you are 2-5, is challenging.
I don't mean the 2023. Oh, do you mean his entire?
Oh, yes.
I mean, Sam Pittman
at Arkansas is, 19 and 17. He is 19-17. So it would seem that he's in a spot where he's probably got to kind of coach for his supper a little bit here.
So I keep that in mind, because if you talk about programs that could unseat the coaching market with dumb money. Hello.
Also, wait, excuse me. He's 21-21. That was his record before the season. He is literally 500 at Arkansas right now. Yes.
So I like change agent in the coaching market. What unseats like, that's the thing where if you're Arkansas and you've got that hog in you, like I believe that you do, and you want to make a statement about where you are and what you are in a conference that's about to very rapidly change in your station of the country specifically.
Yeah.
I could see Arkansas really, really taking a run at things.
Hey, Richard. Who's the guy who, if like the loudest Arkansas boosters had a little bourbon, they would get Hunter Yurecek to try to hire?
Where are you going with this? I don't know, because that, like I said, I don't know.
Who's
because
the big
I think
dumb booster
get...
pick for this job? And specifically, has he ever ridden a motorbike?
I don't think they're going to run that one back.
Here's the way to know who Arkansas might hire. Here's the starting list. You go to the Little Rock Touchdown Club's speaker website, as I'm doing this year. Here are possible candidates who are speaking at the Little Rock Touchdown Club and thus are going to be friends with all the Arkansas boosters this year. Sam Pittman kicked off the year. Laura Rutledge from ESPN, if she wants to get into coaching. Peyton Manning, he knows ball as well. Tony Dorsett spoke there. Juracek, the AD. Peyton Hillis spoke at the Arkansas at the Little Rock Touchdown Club this year. Could Arkansas boosters want to hire him? Jim McMahon. Butch Jones. Well, that's, I mean, he's already in the state. Cheryl, obviously, is doing. Jackie Cheryl is speaking to the Little Rock Touchdown Club next week. Nathan Brown, Chris Doering, Alyssa Lang from ESPN, Ryan McGee from ESPN, ball. David Cutcliffe, he knows ball. And then for their awards banquet, they are having Kurt Warner or Reggie Bush. I guess they haven't decided which one of them yet is speaking to the Little Rock Touchdown Club. But point is, it's going to be someone on that list who Arkansas boosters are going to try to hire if they fire.
My money's on Laura or Alyssa. Look, they've got dumb money, and I think they're wily enough to try to do something if it gets bad enough. And I think that's kind of the point here. And that's where I look at Arkansas, and I just kind of wonder. You know, Jeff Traylor's sitting out there.
And by the way, Jeff Traylor coached high school football in like almost Arkansas. Like,
he also coached at Arkansas.
Oh, great point.
That's the point I was making. That's the point I was making there.
Yes, with Chad Morris. Gilmer, I believe, is like north and east of Dallas. Like, it's getting into that Louisiana, Arkansas part of Texas.
Yeah, it's a space that I am watching because it's a space that I'm watching. Minnesota. Sean F. asked about Minnesota. What's going on in Minnesota? The boat seems to be taking on water. Quarterback's not as good. Running back's not as good. Lost some weapons. Schedule hasn't been awesome either. Yes, they should handle it, but frisky on the schedule.
Okay. I have developed a bit of a theory of the Minnesota Golden Gophers. And it's that, and this is largely due to the recruiting that PJ Fleck and his staff have done since he's been there, but they have had a preponderance of guys on offense, like serious, memorably good college football players who have boosted their offensive productivity a lot during his time there. They went and got Rashad Bateman, Tyler Johnson, and Max Williams, Daniel Falele, the huge tackle who I believe mm-hmm. Richard now plays in the NFL and is a really good player. Mm-hmm. Tanner Morgan was obviously there and solid for a long time. Mel Ibrahim there and solid for a long time. That offense was blessed with a nice mixture of high end talent and continuity for a lot of time. And PJ kind of like changed offensive coordinators, like he changes sweaters there, and just like, you know, there's a lot of, it's kind of a who's who of offensive coordinators and offensive assistants who you forget where they're working at any given time have come through there, and that continues to this day. But they've had continuity and they've had really high end talent at every level, every position group of their offense for a long time, and I think this year they don't. And I think that offensively, when you look at what has been like a huge fall off, even off of some decline over the last couple of years, I just think you can kind of identify some specific things that they are missing. It's not an amazing blocking group. There's not an amazing pass catcher. Like we talked before the year, like Brevin Spanford is supposed to be the best player on Minnesota, the tight end for them. And he has 13 catches for 66 yards this year. Like he's just been zeroed in the passing game. I think some of it is the quarterback. Ethan Kaliakmanis is like not really ready for prime time. Like I just don't, he just hasn't been good. Not to say he never can be, but he just hasn't been good. And so you've just seen what appears to me on offense to be a break in what was a pretty fortunate run of having a lot of great players at different positions over the years. And you see what happens when that happens.
And I also think that, like, you've got a situation where, do I trust PJ to rebound and keep the floor high? Yeah, probably. It has stepped back. Okay, but do I trust PJ to make some shake in a long term?
Yeah.
Probably more than I don't.
It is possible, maybe even trending 50-50, that they do not make a bowl this year. That would be the first time since his first year, 2017. But that was a weird year. There had been a lot of turmoil around that program at the moment that they fired Tracy Clase at the end of the 2016 season. It's not like you can't forgive, especially given what he's built there. If you can't forgive the odd 4-8 or 5-7, no one's suggesting that. I mean, he's good there, but they need to restock the cupboards, and in particular, the offense just has no like big splash playability whatsoever. There's nobody on that offense, especially with what appears to have been done to Brevin Spanford, who like really scares you. I don't think. I watched that team in person the first week of the season. Like, Darius Taylor can tote the rock, but it's not a robust offense. There's not a single receiver who's done much of note. Defense has a few good players. Their safety, their free safety, Newbin is one of the best players in the Big Ten. But I think we're seeing an ebb in the recruiting and the roster stocking at that program. And when you're a middle class Big Ten team, that's where that can lead.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you should lead yourself to homefieldapparel.com. Use our promo code SZD20 to get 20% off your first order at Home Field Apparel. I visited with our friends at Home Field in Dallas for the pop-up happy hour at the W Hotel in downtown Dallas.
Yeah.
It was selling like hotcakes for real. I don't know if Josh came, our friend Josh at Homefield, if he actually came back with anything. I mean, the stuff was moving. So, and it was just Oklahoma, Texas stuff. There were also, funny enough, it was two fraternity semifinals in the hotel that night. And so we just sort of sat at the table and watched like drunk college kids in very nice formal wear, like come through the lobby all day. And then, you know, the people who were actually in town also for the game, come through the lobby, buy a few things, etc. So you know that they have premium and comfortable vintage collegiate apparel. You know it's good. Go get some. SCD 20, 20% off your first order at homefieldapparel.com.
I've got my Blaster the Burrow Colorado School of Mind shirt on right now. Shout out to our beloved YouTube audience, youtube.com/@splitzoneduo. Richard's got his Thick Six fundraising home field shirt on at the moment. Richard looking fantastic. If you go to my Twitter, Alex_Kirshner, no C in that last name, you'll see that I have a pinned tweet at the moment advertising, telling people about an event that I will be at with Home Field in Athens, Georgia, UGA's homecoming weekend at 5 p.m. on Friday, November 3rd at the Graduate Hotels. Would love to see you there. Always a blast to be with our friends from Home Field. Thank you very much for your support. SCD20 is the code. Richard, tell him about it.
Well, he's not here, so you don't have to. We just taste it. That's all we do.
All right. We just taste it. That's very reasonable. It is the week 7 tasting menu. We already had some games this week and some pretty big ones. I will tell you that we were actually going to do a little like what's up with Coastal Carolina thing in that previous segment. But then they went to Boone and won a game against App State.
As heady a play as you will ever see from their running back last night. App was letting him score at the end there with about a minute and change left. And he went slid like right before the end zone, got him on the 1 yard line. And then I think a previously the backup kicker, booted in basically an extra point to win the game at the end there. That is good clock and game management. Well done, Coastal.
You need good clock and game management. But let's go through it. Wednesday night, Sam Houston at New Mexico State. I think it is likely to be one more week of pain for the Sam Houston Bearcats against a pretty decent New Mexico State team that is playing at home. Sam Houston has like the worst offense in the country. They are 133rd out of 133 in SP Plus, but there's some optimism.
I don't think the defense is that bad either.
But no, the defense can play ball. The defense has hung in there. I think that the optimism comes on the horizon when they have games against FIU, UTEP, Kennesaw State, which is a good FCS team, but an FCS team for now, future conference opponent. So hang in there, Bearcats. Better days are, I think, eventually add. Richard, Thursday night, Dana Bowl.
Dana Bowl, Jesus. They're going to be some chapped asses if they lose this game. Some very, very chapped asses.
Houston?
On both ends.
Both.
On both ends.
Yeah.
There are some very, very chapped. They don't want, nobody wants to lose this game in the worst way.
But one of the interesting things about college football is that somebody is going to lose this game. And look, for Houston especially, there's a way that I know Houston wanted this year to go. And it's not, obviously it's not going that way. I mean, it's not that it's been like an utter disaster, but it's been close to an utter disaster if you bake in the fact that they lost to Rice. If they lose this game to Neil Brown, who was like the most hot seated coach in the country coming into the year, and then are 2-4 when Texas comes to town the following week, and then lose that thing. I mean, I'm picking up what you're putting down with that, Richard. Like that is the kind of thing that a coach does when he gets fired. Just saying, like that is that kind of thing. I think that this could be a rapidly escalating situation at Houston if they lose to the team whose coach they poached, and then don't show a pulse in the game that I think is fair to say will be the most looked forward to Houston home football game, like ever, right? Yeah. But yeah, by serious Houston people, like that is a massive game. It's a chance to be on level footing for one afternoon with the program that they believe, rightfully, I believe, tried to keep them out of the Big 12, not just once, but twice decades later, that they hate. I mean, could be simply grisly if Houston does not get it together. Friday night, Tulane, Memphis. Richard, pretty good one here.
Yeah, Tulane, good team. Memphis, good team?
I think so. Mark? I mean, look, I'm entertaining the possibility that this is the first of two meetings between these teams this year. I think that is squarely in the realm of the possible. It's a good moment for Ryan Silverfield. Like, you win this game, you are in great position to at least play in the conference title game. Lose and more possibilities enter the fray. I mean, I don't think that the whole trajectory of that program has changed just yet in the first few weeks of the season, but this would be a chance to really make certain smug podcasters who called for his firing last year. And I don't know who they are. You know, we'll investigate that, but it would be a chance to make certain haters have to admit that they had erred in evaluating him how they did.
Stanford at Colorado. It's a Colorado game you can actually watch, so that's nice. And it's on Friday night. I think we kind of know what's going to happen here. I think Colorado, the post-insane hype Colorado is really interesting to me in that, all right, you just had Arizona State, which is a team that's injured to hell. You had them on the road. You won with a field goal. Okay. I basically am trying to say, like, can Colorado get up for these types of games? Like, can Colorado get up for Pac-12 Network Arizona State team that's really injured? Can Colorado get up for Friday night Stanford? Yes, big stage ESPN, but it's Colorado. All right, I'm sorry, but it's Stanford. You know what I'm saying? Like it that's the thing I'm kind of curious about here. It'll be a home game, so I'm sure, you know, the celebs will be out in force or what have you, especially on given that it's Friday night. But now that I think the biggest amount of shine has worn off, and I think that they are relatively back down to earth, or at least close to it, as far as hype, attention, et cetera, et cetera. How do they respond in a sense of what motivates them? This is where you figure out internal motivation of your players and the teams that you have when you're not on the grandest stages, when you don't have all the national hype, like all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it is a huge moment for Colorado to bank another W here. This will be, if they win their fifth victory of the season, then they go on a bye. And then they get into the part of the year where I think they're going to lose quite a few games because they close with UCLA, Oregon State, Arizona, at Wazoo, at Utah. Like,
Arizona's a toss up or toss up adjacent. Toss up,
but everything else there, they are going to be an underdog. Everything else.
Yeah.
Everything else, they're going to be an underdog. Even Arizona, we'll see. I mean, probably they'll be favored in that game, but I don't know. I mean, Arizona's an okay team. Point is, like, if you want to guarantee that you, or not guarantee, but get yourself right to the precipice of bowl eligibility, this is an important win to bank to kind of have
Travis Hunter, have his offensive. I think, is going to be back in this game, by the way.
Yes, Deion was indicating that at his press conference this week. Saturday, early, Arkansas, Alabama. I still think Alabama's going to find a second loss somewhere, but it's not going to be here.
Okay, yeah, we talked about this earlier. Yes. What is... I don't think Alabama is what they were on Saturday against A&M.
Unless...
But we'll see. But we'll see.
Unless... I don't know. That's an interesting question. This is a good one. In the Sun Belt, Georgia Southern and James Madison. We are seeing what could be a really great breakthrough at Georgia Southern right now. They are 4-1. They are coming out of a bye here. They have a chance to win 8 or 9 games. And what we are really seeing, though, is the fruits of Clay Helton totally changing the way they do business on offense. The Georgia Southern that Godfrey knew and that Godfrey's parents knew and everyone knows is no longer. They you know, Clay Helton last year came in and they stopped playing offense that way. And the quarterback, Davis Brin, in every game except the one where he gave the ball to Wisconsin a million times, has been really, really good. I think that's still Georgia Southern's only loss. It's an offense that is, you know, modern in the way that people wanted, that some people at Georgia Southern wanted them to move to. They have done it with Clay Helton, and now they get a chance against what I think is the best team in the Sun Belt. Unfortunately, not a team that is eligible to win the Sun Belt, but a really good James Madison team.
Michigan State and Rutgers. I really don't know why this is on this list. Please regale me.
It's on the list because I wanted to point out to you that Michigan State is probably going to lose to Rutgers. For Rutgers, it's a 2-week season right now. To kind of reduce down, they have 4 wins. They play Michigan State. They play Indiana. Then they have a bye week. And after that, they probably will not score more than 20 points in the game the rest of the year. Ohio State, Iowa, Penn State, Maryland. Win your next 2 and you're in a bowl going into your bye week. It's going to get ugly down the stretch for Rutgers because of the way the scheduling gods worked. But Rutgers, next 2 weeks, chance to make a bowl game. Cuse at FSU is the ABC early game, which speaks to maybe for TV purposes, a somewhat sleepy early slate in the eyes of the executives. I don't think Cuse has a chance.
I'm going to a wedding on Friday night. So yeah, we like a sleepy early slate. Let me tell you right now.
We're going to talk a little bit about some stuff that Dino Babers said this week on a show for our Patreon subscribers at patreon.com/SCD. Also some stuff that Mark Stoops said that we think is interesting to dig into about the state of the modern game. In the middle slate on Saturday, BYU at TCU. Little angsty for TCU for reasons already described on this show, right? I mean, this is one
You got to get back on track here. Like, you got to arrest a slide here against BYU, I think is the key point, like, is the key thing to know.
And BYU has been up and down, but I think when they take care of the football, they most notably didn't when they lost to Kansas. They're pretty potent. So it's not going to be a walk in the park at home in Fort Worth for TCU. Florida at South Carolina. Richard, if Florida loses this game, Will you let people try to fire Billy? It would be so good for our business. Think about it.
Toss up game. I think it's 2.5-point spread. I think Florida has already signaled that they're trying to change some things about how they travel and how they. The thing is, if you do that, you gotta win. You gotta win. If you're telling people we're changing stuff about how we travel and how we go about road tilts, et cetera, you gotta win. I don't know that they've won an SEC road game under Billy Napier. I can't remember. I don't think they have. So, okay. You know, it's Carolina's got the better quarterback. I can tell you that right now.
They do.
But you know, they're similar in station in the SEC. which is just where they are. So toss-up game. We'll see.
Something that I would enjoy at some point in the second half of the season is if Nicholas Harbor for South Carolina just really like went to the moon.
But the funny thing about, and I want to go back to the quarterback point real quick. The funny thing about the quarterback thing is like, it's a real stylistic. They have the better quarterback, right? Because you've got Graham Mertz who didn't care of the ball. You understand the incredible lack of verticality in this offense, what they are trying to do, all that sort of stuff. And then you've got Spencer Rattler, who's got a howitzer and can unleash it when needed. So I think like context of the situation completely taken away from it, I think it's an interesting football game. But then you add the context, and the context is the context.
The context is the context. That's a very good way to put it. Kansas at Oklahoma State. Kansas defense showed a little something for the first time in ages in beating UCF, which just couldn't move it against them at all. I think the operative question here for Kansas's chances against Oklahoma State is quarterback, which I guess won't be Jalen Daniels.
No, it doesn't seem like it. The back spasms again with him. The big thing is like Oklahoma State, can you make Jason Bean pass a lot? If you can't, and Kansas gets to run the triple option, you're probably going to lose, honestly.
Yeah. I'm thinking that for Oklahoma State, what I'm pondering here is like, Oklahoma State probably should lose this game because I think they're playing a better team. I don't know where the spread settled, but I think Kansas is a better team than Oklahoma State this year. If Oklahoma State loses, are the people in Stillwater going to view this as losing to Kansas, or are they going to view it as losing to a pretty good Big 12 team?
They should view it as the latter, but I don't think they will.
It's interesting, you know, sociological question for this weekend. A&M at Tennessee. Sometimes, Richard, the Tennessee run defense springs a leak like it is the goddamn Titanic. They are pretty good down to down, but they give up some absolute home run carries that have really, really crushed them on
That's
specific
basically
what drives.
Happened against Florida.
On specific drives, it's these big carries. That hasn't been the only reason they've lost a game. Like they beat South Carolina despite giving up a 75-yarder after pretty much bottling up Mario Anderson and fellas all night. The A&M run game, the reason I bring this up, the A&M run game has not been explosive at all this year. It hasn't worked out the way that, I mean, very little has worked out exactly how A&M probably plotted it out, and they have a backup quarterback playing now. But between Le'Veon Moss, Amari Daniels, Ruben Owens, the big-time freshman who's been like their number three running back, they just have not had the home run hitting that they would definitely like to have. What I'm suggesting here is that this would be a good time for that, for A&M to take some 25, 30-yard drive-changing runs in this game and help out Max Johnson, because otherwise, I think it's a tough opportunity for him to keep up with a Tennessee team that's going to score.
If Texas A&M secondary played like it did on Saturday, Tennessee is going to escort them out of the paint early and often. This could be the Joe Milton game with a capital G. Now, it also could be the Joe Milton game because of A&M's front. Like if A&M is able to get after him with that 5-6 across blitz front that they love to go to on third down, and they come at you from a lot of different angles, and Tennessee is not able to hold up front, and they bamboozle Joe Milton all day, you could get the full Joe Milton the other way, which is not so good. And that's the thing that I'm really paying attention to. If Tennessee is able to block it up and Tennessee is able to hit their shots and this game starts to get out of hand and A&M has to chase, I think it could get late early for the Aggies. So there's sort of like, I see this kind of game on one end of the spectrum or the other. And, you know, the score may be what it is, but I sort of see the rhythm and the pacing and the tenor of the game on one end of the spectrum or the other. But I do think Tennessee can run the ball and is good up front on both sides of the ball.
Troy at Army. I think Troy is rounding back into being Troy. Since Kansas State destroyed them early on, they have a narrow loss to James Madison, but otherwise have been very strong. They have wins over Western Kentucky and Georgia State, which might be good. And they put Arkansas State, which had looked resurgent, in the dirt last week. So I think that Troy's defense in particular is starting to adjust to a new life. We've talked about it a few times. They lost the best player in program history, one of the most prolific linebackers ever, Carlton Marshall, after last year. The offense still isn't great, even though Kamani Vidal, the running back, is very good. But that defense for John Summerall is rounding back into looking really good. And it's apparent that Army, despite its like fun prickliness with this new offense, still has some work to do, judging by what they put out against Boston College. So Troy could give them kind of a world of pain at West Point this weekend.
Yeah, but hey, look, Army's a good offense. It's a good offense.
It's a growing offense.
And they maximize their opportunities. They maximize their drives, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's an interesting one, I think.
Iowa at Wisconsin. This is the Big Ten West Championship game.
Snuff film, dude.
Yeah, no, but snuff it's film. So I agree with you, and like it's gonna be super ugly. But I do want to leave that open. Yeah.
Well, I say that not because of the team's inherent. I say that because it's gonna be raining all weekend in Wisconsin, and there's gonna be 40-mile-per-hour wind gusts in this game.
Yeah, Alex,
do you know how many times a wide receiver caught the ball for Iowa on Saturday?
Was it zero?
It was zero, my good friend.
Yeah. Look, Iowa's offense is worse than it was last year, which I did not think was, I didn't think that was even possible. Like I talked about it before the season. I really mean that, not even in like,
we aren't doing the bit here.
Like, no, it's not. Fuck, I mean, man. Look, the bit has been established. Like, I think everyone understands the deal with Iowa. Cade McNamara getting hurt is a huge blow, but it's not like things were going well even when he was healthy. It is just like offensively a complete disaster. But guess what? The defense, and this is the other side of it, which I thought was pretty guaranteed to be at least a little worse this year because of the who's who of stars that they lost.
It's like approximately the best in the sport.
It's number one in SP Plus after falling to three last. I mean, like, it's just what has happened here. And we tend to focus on the extremely ugly part because it is funny and the Brian Ferentz thing is ridiculous. But, like, dude, Phil Parker and these guys are still, like, dude, is Cooper DeJean going to be, like, a first-round NFL draft pick?
I don't know about first round, but, yeah, NFL player. Like, yeah.
Like, yeah. they just refill, man. Like, from the Wisconsin perspective, like, I don't think Tanner Mordecai is going to be able to do anything either in this game. Like, nothing.
Dude, the mortgage is on under 36 and a half in this game.
Is it that high?
I think it's already under that. Like, I think it's already coming back the other way.
Too many points.
Guys, yeah. I'm telling you guys, if this game goes over 36 and a half, the kids aren't going to college.
Dude.
I'm telling you. It's like, dude, holy cow.
They could set this thing at like 26 and I would think about it. I mean, anyway, so you understand, I think everyone understands the deal, but yeah, it is a huge game because the winner is going to win this division. Like, very, very likely. I don't see anybody else. I mean, maybe Purdue, but no. Like, I think this is a divisional championship game in week 7, so enjoy it. Oregon at Washington. Finally, we get to it.
Game of the week. Jesus,
maybe the game of the year so far, honestly. It's a great one.
What do you mean, maybe? Like, it's the first Pac-12 game since the early 2000s. I can't remember what year I saw, with two teams that are 5-0 or more in a game. The SEC has had like teens of those types of games. Yes, scheduling, et cetera, et cetera. But like, it's a game with stakes, man. And it's two great football teams. And it's going to be fantastic. I think for me, both of them are off byes. They've had kind of a week to get up. I think Washington's receiver room is going to be healthy and ready to rock three deep with their NFL talent. It's like, of the four units in this game, Washington's defense is the weak link. It can get them beat in this game. I think it will. I'm picking Oregon. I think Oregon will win this game. I think if you're Oregon, actually you come out and just say, we're going to run the ball. We're going to try to keep the ball out of Michael Penix Jr.'s hands as much as we can. we're going to, I think charitably, we're going to hope to hell a wide receiver finally drops a ball, drops a deep pass, which they have not to date. But I'm full toss up. Like, Washington winning doesn't surprise me at all, or wouldn't surprise me at all. It shouldn't you. Washington's a great football team.
The thing that I'm wondering about with Washington, though, you're right, that the defense kind of overall is the most pressing thing. Is this the week that the offensive line injuries, depth issues, and even the running back issues, running back injury at the top of the year, become a problem for them? In theory, if they're going to become a problem, this would be the time because of Oregon's defensive front. And that's just kind of what I'll be most closely watching. I still think, you know, Penix and the fellas are going to get, like, there's no way, like, there's no college secondary that has the wherewithal to keep Roma Dunze, Jalen Polk, Jalen McMillan all blanked throughout the game. I mean, someone is going to get theirs, but will Washington's offense ultimately struggle to move the ball because of what they have up front compared to what Oregon has up front? It's a question.
You know, I think that it's, so how does Washington structure this passing game? Like, do you see more in the intermediate? Do you see a little bit more on in that part of the field versus the full on throw it 25 yards deep, like all that kind of stuff? Does Washington come out and maybe even try to run the ball? I don't know. Like, I'm fascinated with how this game plays out. And I'm fascinated that we've got a real deal box office one in this game. Maybe they play twice. I don't know that that's assured. So, you know, let's enjoy this one. Like, I think we're like Texas and Oklahoma. Like, I think we're going to see that again. Oregon, Washington. I don't know that we're going to see that again.
No, it's one of the great Midwestern flyover country night games of all time. Very excited to see Oregon and Washington Saturday evening.
Well, yeah. Real quick, one last on this. Minority coach of the week in an interesting schematic spot is William Inge, Washington's co-defensive coordinator, assistant head coach. Again, minority coach of the week is not an achievement award. It's not a portender or a predictor of success. It's simply taking minority coach in a certain spot and saying, huh, that's interesting. Like I sort of talked about, does Oregon come out on offense and say, nah, man, we're going to try to run the ball. Like, we're going to really try to control the tempo of this game, the pace of this game. We're going to try to keep Michael Penix Jr. on the sidelines as best we can. That Washington is not Colorado, but that is what they tried to do against Colorado, right? They executed that to the nth degree and to an extreme degree, but that is what they also tried to do against Colorado. I wonder, I don't want to do the Bo Nix thing. I think the Bo Nix bit is long dead with what Bo Nix did last season, obviously, what he's done this season to date, but road environment. Testy road environment. I think it's fair to sort of ask the question there.
Yeah. Can I make a distinction from something that you just said? Because I think it's important.
Sure.
Like, he might do something boneheaded at some point that costs him the game, but that just makes him a college quarterback. Like, sure. The whole, like, fuck it, chuck it thing that has kind of been part of his brand when he left Auburn, it doesn't apply anymore. Like, he plays in structure there. He plays well. Like, it doesn't mean he'll never make a dumb play that costs them a game. It just means that he's a different guy than he was before.
The last thing on this, and why I think I take Washington in this game, or excuse me, Oregon, why I lean Oregon in this game, is the, you know, Dan Lanning's ability to kind of maximize the game, particularly with his fourth down and 2-point conversion math and that sort of stuff. That's what I love in this kind of spot for them.
I love that too. Has there ever been a bigger upgrade from a game management perspective than the one that Oregon got when Mario Cristobal left and they hired Dan Lanning? Dude, that's like trading in your Acura for a Bugatti from a game management perspective. I mean, like, what a victory. Because I do love the way he attacks the game as well. And I think he also has a general understanding of time and the clock. So congratulations to Oregon.
That's where, like, this is a 7 fight, baby. This ain't, we ain't bringing threes here. And I think Oregon's going to be able to, but that's where, like, Oregon finishing drives is a massive key here, right? Like, if Oregon driving down the field and then finishing those drives versus potentially Washington relying on the long ball to finish their drives, like, that's stylistically where we're at here. When we talk about Washington's defense in the red zone, it has not been awesome. Now, you don't usually get to the red zone when the game is in any doubt. So there's that to consider. But Oregon going forward on fourth down in the red zone, not settling for threes. That's a thing that I think they're going to do, or at least I think that they, a thing I think they need to do if they get in that scenario, just because of like Washington's going to score. They're going to score.
A couple quick one notes for you. Just kind of things to keep an eye on with Saturday evening games. Louisville at Pitt. Louisville is 6-0, and they are looking at the possibility, I think, of something pretty special. Clemson is not on the slate, with the ACC doing away with divisions. They seem like they could really, really, really put up a crooked number here. I mean, they're playing like an awful Pitt team. I also said Clemson on the slate. I think Florida State's not on the slate either. Yeah, it's not, and that's even more significant. So, like, the schedule for Louisville just falls in a really favorable manner this year, and you know, obviously that is going to come home to roost eventually. But they're 6-0. Pitt is very, very bad. I am not by any stretch predicting the thing that it sounds like I'm preambling toward, but double digit wins is now like likely, and the leap from 10 to 11 to 12 can be marginal sometimes. So like Louisville could really be onto something, and could be a problem for. Also, not only do they not play Florida State and Clemson, they don't play North Carolina. I mean, they just like,
oh Jesus,
they just did. I mean, like they could just like waltz to the conference championship game here. I mean, I don't like it's the schedule really, really worked out for them. And also they're 6-0. So things are I'm intrigued by Louisville. Pitt has a new quarterback.
Louisville. Let me take you for a walk here, Alex. Louisville, 11-0. Where's that Kentucky game?
At home.
Louisville 11-0. At home. Against Kentucky. Mark Stoops and the gang marching in there to ruin a season. See you Thanksgiving
been,
weekend.
Been done. Now. I think that happened with Lamar Jackson, as a matter of fact.
Yes, it did.
Yeah. Arizona and Wazoo. This is a bounce back spot for Wazoo's offense after UCLA just totally zeroed them last week. Like completely zeroed them. And for Arizona, I think it's still going to be the backup. Like who Richard, you think might be better than Jaden Delora. So if it's not like, I'm sure Delora would like to get up for this game. It's against his old program, but it's an interesting spot for Jed Fish and for Arizona.
For the record, don't know about better, but am wondering if it's like not a value or not a negative, not a net negative that the backup is in the game overall. But it could also be a situation where backup comes in, has success for 2-3 games, film gets got, which I think is what happened in the Arkansas State situation that we've been talking about the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it could be a lot of points ultimately here. Arizona, good physical run game, so that will benefit whoever is playing quarterback for that team. Auburn, LSU. Richard, this is the game every year that I evaluate strictly based on vibes. I have no prediction for you. It will be fun. It will be weird. It will verge on the silly and zany and kind of dumb.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Always. Just sit back and be excited about this one. Like it's, you're not Brian Kelly. You're not Hugh Freeze. It's not your job to figure out the schematics that are definitely going to go to shit by the end of the first quarter, as they always do in this game. Teams will throw eggs at each other. Someone will get hit in the face and get an egg on their face, and that team will lose the game. Kansas State at Texas Tech. I think whoever wins this game might have the best chance to be a party crasher in the Big 12. I don't think anyone's going to. I think it's going to be Texas, Oklahoma. But like for Kansas State to kind of maintain its status as the other team that has a chance in this league and to keep up its title defense in a serious fashion, they got to win this game on the road in Lubbock.
Marshall and Georgia State. Toss up. Marshall, I think, this is the better team here, and I think we'll win, and I think should handle business here, but Georgia State, frisky.
Yeah, Georgia State, this is sort of a rubber meets road spot to get an idea of exactly how much they've improved. This is another situation where there were certain smug podcasters, and again, we don't know who they are.
Can't find them.
Who were saying things about this team before the year.
Here they are.
Wondering how long that coach Sean Elliott was going to be in the job. They started
4-0. Just trying to find who did this.
We're just trying to find them. They have started well. They had a tough loss the other week at home, but and that was against a pretty, what we believe is a Troy team that's really rounding into form. They have the good Sun Belt teams coming up here. Like, they also have Louisiana. They got Georgia Southern. They got James Madison. They got App. This is maybe the defining stretch for this guy in this job. Like, how, like, show that you have made progress, that you can actually be one of the top teams in the Sun Belt instead of just, okay, despite where you're located.
Why am I in Air Force?
Big one.
Massive one. Air Force has low key, like, the most efficient offense in the country. Like, it's, or at least one of them. I mean, it's pretty stunning what they're doing, particularly running the ball. Again, I didn't say explosive, I didn't say scoring, but from an efficiency perspective, they get the ball, they drive the ball, and they score the ball. It's pretty impressive. So how are you going to hold up in that, in that environment? Wyoming, I think that I do not share Godfrey's excitement. Is that the right word?
Well, he loves Wyoming. Yeah, he's excited. He's romanticizing this. And he might be right.
Big Wyoming guy. I do not share that opinion, personally.
The offense is bad despite having Harrison Whaley. It just is. And that App game, they lose that game if they don't get a block six the other direction.
Well, but here's the thing. Wyoming's not going to get the ball. How many drives do you think Wyoming's going to get in this game?
Like 10, if they're lucky.
Maybe 10. Give me Air Force. What's the spread? Give me Air Force.
I don't even have the spread in front of me, but I know Air Force is a favorite in this game, as they should be at home. Wyoming is going to need to, in a different way, give Air Force a heavy dosage of its own medicine if they're going to win this game. Like, Harrison Whaley is going to have like a night in order to keep Wyoming's offense punching on level footing with Air Force, because you know Air Force is going to do it all night. Miami at North Carolina. Okay, we've had our fun. I'm willing to put aside the calamity for Miami at the end of last week and say that I think that they could still win this game despite the enormous shift in attitudes about them because of what happened Saturday.
The most frustrating thing about the end of the game situation with the Miami thing was that we think Miami's good. Like, we think they booted away a game they had won and pulled out of the fire and that they're good. Like, there is a very significant chance that that's the reason Miami doesn't go to the ACC championship game at the end of the season.
Yep. Can't have it. But I do think that overall, this is going to be for Drake May, like, one of the stiffest tests that he's going to see all season. Like, the Miami secondary, and this is always how it is at Miami. I mean, Miami has been able to recruit very highly touted defensive backs. This is by far the best thing that Drake May and the UNC offense have seen, is the Miami defense. I mean, they haven't even played what you would classify as like a good defense, let alone like a potential top 10, top 15 unit all season. So, like, that is a heavyweight fight when UNC has the ball in this game.
Yeah. And I'm here for the May show. I am so here.
Richie, you like the NFL. Do you like him enough that you would think about him for 1-1, or just, you know, no, don't overthink it, because Caleb exists.
Drake May?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
You would think about him over Caleb?
Yeah. I think it's kind of nuts that everybody, not nuts, I understand why. I think it is weird that people default to Caleb Williams, and like, there's no other, like,
he is insane. I mean,
they are pretty eye to eye. I'm not going to do this very long, but like, the theory of the case here, and it's a thing that I personally learned the hard way with Zach Wilson. I'm not saying Caleb Williams is going to be Zach Wilson, but the Zach Wilson thing, if your analysis of Zach Wilson landed on the splash plays, the out of structure plays, that sort of stuff, that's where you got. I think that Drake May is better than Caleb Williams in structure. Now, I'm not doing a draft eval right now. I'm not watching them for draft purposes. I'll do that in the spring. But as far as that's concerned, Drake May is like That's one of the reasons why I can't wait to see him on this, finally, this stage. I think this is the 7:30 ABC game, if I'm not mistaken. Like, he's going to have the proper stage.
Yeah.
And and you're going to see, you're going to see it on Saturday. I mean,
yeah, the big one of the night, which we'll get to in a moment, is on NBC. Mizzou at Kentucky. This is a big one for Mizzou to sort of like keep up momentum or build back momentum after a tough one against LSU. Like Kentucky looks, I mean, you can never write off Kentucky. You saw what they did with the Florida a couple weeks ago, but Mizzou has like the far more powerful ability to blow a game open scoring points. And it would be nice to flex it against an SEC team that is known for gumming up the works a little bit when they play more talented teams. Now, just redact what happened in Athens last week, because I think that was at Georgia. I forget. Redact what happened against UGA, because they didn't do it in that game.
USC Notre Dame. This is, and you know, it's another game where I, like, Notre Dame, just like, don't throw the ball, run the ball, just run the piss out of the ball.
So this is the thing, Richard, like, we are going to learn something about if there has been progress on USC's defense. Like, Bear Alexander's a good player. Like, they got some serious guys who can beat up physically and who can play in the trenches.
Those second level defenders tackle. Make them bring their lunch pail against Audric Estime.
Make them
set an edge for four full quarters against Power and Counter. That's what I want to see.
That's what it's gonna be, those gap runs, like where you just have guards and tackles. The guards and tackles for Notre Dame are gonna approach like Bryson Shaw and these guys in Notre Dame secondary, and they're gonna say, business decision?
How bad do you want it?
Yeah.
How bad do you want it tonight, fellas?
Yeah. I do think that this is it's yet another, and there are so many of these opportunities for Alex Grinch to demonstrate that he is that he's good at this. Like, there's so many chances. And by the way, that guy is getting more public support from not only Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams than he deserves. So it's a chance to pay it off. Like, I don't know if you've seen USC's availability this week, but like Caleb Williams in his press conference after the game the other night was like, this thing about our defense, paraphrasing, it's getting ridiculous. Our brothers are the reason we were in the game, which actually isn't wrong.
I noted this. They played well on Saturday night.
Lincoln Riley was saying at a press conference or a media availability after a practice this week that, like, you don't do what we're doing with tackles for loss and sacks unless you're doing something right on defense. Like,
all right.
Let's see it. Like, sure, let's see it for an entire football game against a good offense. And then, Notre Dame. Against a powerful running game.
Stylistically, this offense. We talk about tackling. We talk about toughness. Like, it ain't, Notre Dame ain't coming out here with a lot of razzle dazzle. All right. Like, we understand what this is going to be. Either you bring your lunch pail or you don't in this game is my question. And like that, that is the test for USC's defense. That is literally the question for USC's defense.
Yep. That's pretty much the deal. UAB and UTSA in San Antonio. You are pointing out that UTSA has got things other than Frank Harris's injury issues. Well, Frank looks good now. He looks back, but they have depth issues elsewhere.
Yeah, they've been injured across the board this season. It's not just Frank. Frank is the biggest one, but they've been injured across the board.
UCLA, Oregon State. This, you have flagged this one to me privately as being like one of your games of the week. Tell me about it.
Yeah, I think you've got two of the, like, I know Oregon State lost to Washington State, but like, this is one of those like potentially like Pac-12 elimination games for like who's going to be like third or fourth and jockeying for maybe second. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're going to get that like two through five quadrant in the Pac-12 is going to be fascinating when we get to November. And this is a game that is going to help decide that. I mean, Oregon State's got a plan, and Oregon State out Utah, because look, that's a Utah thing, which, and I don't know if Utah plays this week. We have not talked about that Cam Rising thing, I don't think, on the show. It's ridiculous that Utah acted like he could play. It's crazy.
Yeah. Utah has been calling him like close or week to week, or he's around the corner. And
it kind of sounds like Kyle Whittingham's putting it at the foot of the doctor, by the way.
It seemed, I don't know if this was the Salt Lake Tribune or someone else in Utah. It does seem like there's been an odd like public relations campaign around his health that seems at odds with how badly he's actually hurt. We'll get
and
to
I
it.
Feel bad for him because he had to come out and say last week, like, dude, it's not just the ACL, it's way more than that. Oregon State got Utah out of the paint because Utah couldn't move the ball. UCLA could run into that same problem on offense. I don't think they will because I think UCLA is better on offense than that Utah team that they played last Friday night. But UCLA on defense kicks ass, man. Absolutely kicks ass.
This is your late night palate cleanser. This is an FCS top 10 matchup between number 10 Montana and number 3 Idaho. It is on ESPN2 linear late, I think 9:30 Central, 10:30 Eastern. It's at the Kibbe Dome, which is a legitimately unique venue in college sports. It's on big ESPN2, and it's a couple of really good football teams to kind of close out your evening if you're looking for something fun to watch at the end of the night. Good move by the Big Sky, first of all, to do a TV deal that got them a few of these games that are on, you know, traditional television, pay TV, so that you can expand the eyeballs that are going to look at this. And this is a good one. Idaho is 5-1. They were not far away from being 2-0 against FBS before Cal came back on them pretty late. Idaho has already beaten a couple of ranked FCS teams, Sac State and Eastern Washington. Sac State is very good. So both of these teams are like very much in the FCS, not just playoff, but possible national title or at least semifinal contender bucket. And they're playing on TV in the Kibbe Dome at an hour of the day when there will not be a lot of other games happening. I fucking love it. Way to go, Big Sky.